accession number 18676, reel 12.
Occupation. But because he was on this reserve, that didn't count, and they coloured him back into the army. He was very bitter about that, was Claude. This is some more of the stuff of the African Native Section at 13th General. It was never known as the African Native Section in the hospital. It was always called the Jungle. And who have we got that I can remember? There's Taffy Edwards, Jock Campbell, Hetherington. Now, he'd had a tough time. He'd been on Malta for about 2 years. And as you I don't know whether you remember, but they were literally on starvation rations at the end. And to conserve the food, they had compulsory bed for 2.5 hours every afternoon. And it was to conserve energy so they didn't eat as much. And then it's myself and two nignogs, I don't know them. Mousy Bone. Now, this is Lieutenant Basili. Now, he was an Egyptian, and it was what they called a local enlistment. He was an Egyptian doctor, and it was a local enlistment into the RAMC. And he was a very nice chap, and he was quite a clever doctor. And next to him, that's King Turner, who we got. And he's the man who I got later on to upgrade me. I'll come to that later on. I can't remember the other officer's name. And then that's Bliss. That's Tommy Waitson. That's Dougie Wakefield. He was a regular soldier. And that's Claude Faulkner. That Dougie Wakefield, he was in Singapore before the war, and he married the Italian ambassador's daughter, and during the war she was interned. This is Claude Faulkner with the three cats we had. They were Ginger, Snowball, you can guess which Snowball was, and Tiger. And we used to feed them once a day at tea time. And what we used to do, we used to put the food out for them, usually tinned fish, outside the quartermaster's stores that I was running with Jock. And bang on a tin plate. And they used to come hell for leather for food. So what we used to do, we used to get Claude to hold them all, or maybe a couple of hundred yards away, and then bang on the plate, and then let them go. And we used to have bets on which would get there first. And you can bet your bottom dollar, if Claude backed Snowball, the black one, he could beat the hind legs off the other two. And yet if anybody else backed it, it was all this last. I don't know whether he used to talk to it or what, but it was very strange the way when he backed it, it all this won. This is Ginger and Snowball finishing off the meal. Taxi had had enough and he'd gone. This is at shower time at the Jungle, 13th General. This would be in 1944, around about October time. This is Tommy Waitson. He married an ATS from 19th General Hospital, which was about 20 miles away. She was a nice girl. She was a German Jew who just got out of Germany in time. And they actually lived in Tel Aviv. Her father was a wholesale wine merchant. And they were married at Mowaska, which is the garrison town at Ishmaelia. I was best man. The others, I'm afraid, have no idea. They were friends of the bride. This is Tommy Watson's wedding again at Mowaska, Ishmaelia. Here they are coming out of the registry office at it was in the grounds of the YWCA at Mowaska. This is Tommy Watson in the middle and myself on the right, and the other sergeant, I'm afraid I don't know his name. Anyway, they were catching the one and only train. There's one train every 24 hours from Mowaska to Tel Aviv, and it was an overnight train. And we went down to the station to see him off. Of course, it was a troop train. And the RTO, that's the bloke in charge of railway transport officer. It was a strict rule that it was a segregated train. No ATS, no female were allowed to travel in the same compartment as soldiers. So that was it, and he wouldn't bend the rule at all. So Tommy and his bride spent the first night apart on two parts of the train. This is the sergeant's mess at 13th General Hospital. There was 84 sergeants and warrant officers in this mess. It was quite a big mess. And once a month, he used to hold a dance. The first Monday in the month, where the sisters and the ATS were invited. And we used to have the whole floor cleared and just the tables round the side. And then we used to put an annex up outside with an entrance at the far end of the mess room for the overflow. This was the annex that we used to put up alongside the sergeant's mess at 13th General on dance night. And again, we were using these EPIP tents. And you can maybe see now how they were brigaded together here. There's one, two there, but you could extend them, as I've said before, to any number you wanted. This is the annex again for the dance night, and unfortunately you can't see it, but along here and stretching further back towards the mess was always a marvellous buffet. We used to pay £20 piastres, which is the equivalent of about 2 shillings. A week, extra messing, which, as I say, there was 84 sergeants in mess, so it gave the mess caterer quite a fair bit of money to spend every time we had a do on extra messing, on extra grub and such like. And the cooks used to do a wonderful job. There we had Italian POW cooks, and we had Italian waiters as well. This is a fireplace in the sergeant's mess. It used to get very cold in winter, and for about 2 months we used to have a fire going in there at night, and used to get around there and sit and yarn, etc., listen to the wireless. And these drawings were done in chalk by an Italian waiter in the mess, and they were copied from a magazine that was on the go during the war called Men Only. This photograph of me was taken at 13th General. It was taken by the night wardmaster in the medical section of the General Hospital, who was making a bob or two for himself on the side doing portrait photographs. This chap here is Wallace Straker. And he used to work at Doggett's, at the same shop as Alma worked at, and he was in the RAF. And during the war, so many of them were allowed to volunteer to transfer to BOAC as maintenance staff for their flying boat base on the Bitter Lakes. And he transferred, and Alma let him know that I was at 13th General, and we got in touch with each other. And he and his friend here, they came down and they spent a weekend down at 13th General with us. And, you know, I put them up for sleeping accommodation, etc., and we used the mess. And then at Christmas, I went up there to BOAC depot, where they were servicing these flying boats, and spent Christmas up there with them. This is Wallace Straker and me at 13th General, the jungle. This would be taken in about November 1944. Oh, by the way, by this time, they brought this wonderful scheme out for when you were going to go home. It was called Python. I don't know what the letter stood for, but that's what it was called. And it depended on your age and service group, and also how long you'd been abroad. And it was those who'd been out longest were going home first. And it got underway around about the middle of 44. And then just before Christmas 44, it came up that my Python number and age and service group would be going home in 46. No. 45. That's right. We'd be going home in 45, and it would be within the first 6 months. This is me at the African Native Section, 13th General. This would be taken just before Christmas, 1944. This is Wallace Straker and me at BOAC depot up on the Bitter Lakes. I was a civilian again now. The clothes, of course, belonged to Wallace. But still, I managed to get into them. It was quite a change to be out of uniform, although there it was khaki drill most of the time. This is me again at Christmas 1944 at BOAC servicing unit on the Bitter Lakes. It was Sunderland flying boats and Catalina flying boats that they were using in those days. This is a sample of the micrographs that I was telling you about earlier on in the tape. This was the Christmas card for 1944. And as I say, he wrote it on about an A4 was the actual size of the original, and it was microfilmed and then flown to England and then enlarged up to what? About 3 by 3.5, and it used to take 4 days, whereas before it used to take about 4 months, anything 3 to 4 months for an ordinary letter. And then at the same time as I did this, they also brought out a letter card, and they used to take about 7 days. Another photograph of Wallace Straker, myself, and the other chap is from the BOAC depot service station on the Bitter Lakes. This was taken just before Christmas. I detested being at 13th General Hospital working with the Africans. I had no time for them whatsoever. And on 13th of November, I got this Captain King Turner to upgrade me, A1 again, fit for the field. And he did it without any medical examination. He just said, what do you want it for? I told him, I said, I want to put in for a transfer to a field unit. I said, this is no good to me, I don't like it here. I said, oh, you know what you're doing then. So he just upgraded me to A1. But after being in a field unit where the comradeship meant everything, you got to a place like 13th General, and as I say, there was 84 sergeants in that mess, and they used to be banded in little cliques, and there was no pulling together. You could never get all of them to pull together at all. They were all these little cliques running their own thing. And then, of course, with the blackies, who I had no time for at all, and I never have had. So I got upgraded, and as I say, I put this application in for a transfer to a field unit. So the then company officer then sent for me and wanted to know what I wanted to go back to a field unit for. So I told him, just passed it, mentioned in passing about the little cliques in the sergeant's mess. I didn't make a song and dance about that, but I made a song and dance about being with Africans. And I told him I didn't volunteer for African Native Section, which nearly all the others had. All the others had been corporals, and they'd brought this scheme out down at base, which I didn't know naught about at the time, was that if you were a corporal and volunteered for one of the native sections, you could be made up to sergeant, and this is what they were doing. But it was no good to me. Anyway, cut a long story short, things came to a head after Christmas, and I was so despondent. I kept going back every week to orderly room to see company officer to see what about my transfer. And in the finish, I think it was to shut me up. We had in January, we opened up a section for Yugoslavian refugees. And there was women, children and men. And they built this, I think it was a 200 accommodation. It wasn't a hospital, although we could treat them. For about 200 people just outside the main gate. And it was, a Professor Flom. He was a psychiatrist. He was a Viennese Jew, and he was the MO in charge of it. So I think to shut me up, they gave me the job of running it on behalf of the army, acting like a ward master, but because they were civilians. And I was that until my Python date came up in February. I went to base depot, and there was about 50 RAMC sergeants, corporals, and a few privates there waiting to go. And then right at the last minute, the ship that we were supposed to go on was filled up with released RAF personnel who'd been captured and held in prisoner of war camps that had been liberated by the Russians. And it took an awful lot of negotiations to get these men back. And they were giving them naturally priority to get back to England, because some of them were in really poor condition. Anyway, cut a long story short, in the finish, we 50 RAMC blokes were put aboard the same ship on the pretext that we would look after them for any medical treatment they needed. There was the usual ship's doctor, etc., but they felt that if they could have 50 RAMC aboard looking after, there was about 1,000 of these ex-RAF, it would give them a big boost. Well, we didn't object to that. So we landed at Liverpool about 2 days, 3 days before Good Friday. 2 days before Good Friday, 1945. But of course they had to take us all the way down to Aldershot. And they stuck us in Aldershot base depot there. And we were there over the weekend. And then Easter Monday, we got leave. The passes were signed for Easter Monday. 6 o'clock. No special trains were laid on or anything to get us to London. And we had to make our own way. And it took us from 6 o'clock, and it was 11:15 at night when I got to Pensher. They'd given up hope at Alma, they thought something had gone wrong. Because I told them we were coming, like, and rung them up and told them we were back in England and was coming up. And they really thought something had gone wrong. Anyway, it was, as I say, it was about 11:15 when I got there. So that was the end of my Middle East sojourn. Now then, when we came home on this Python scheme, you were guaranteed a minimum of 3 months in England before they could post you abroad again. So everybody was saying, oh, well, that's just to cover themselves. By God, it was. I got 28 days disembarkation leave, and then in June they gave us 10 days embarkation leave. And we're exactly 3 months to the day, 91 days from landing in England to being shipped out to Germany. In the meantime, of course, in the June 28th, I got married. But that was all laid on for July, and it all had to be brought forward in a rush. And at that time, I'd been at Strensel, running a reception room at Strensel, and I'd only been there a fortnight when this come up. And I'd been on a weekend leave. And when I got back, this posting had come, and the OC, the medical officer, he was furious about it, and it tried always to get it stopped. And of course it couldn't. And when he was talking to me, and he was telling me that he tried to get it stopped by Northern Command. And I had to have a medical, you see, another medical. And when he looked at my paybook and saw that I'd been downgraded to base, and then upgraded to A1. He said, how did you get upgraded to A1? So I told him, like. So I said, well, I said, he'll tell you what. He says, I'll put you up for a medical board. He said, and I'll get you downgraded to base again. I says, you won't. I says, if that's the way they want it, I says, that's the way they can have it. I says, I've no time for army now. And that's what it was. We got 10 days embarkation leave. And it finished on the 10th of July. And 3 days after that, there was 168 senior sergeants and warrant officers on this one draft for Germany. And they didn't know how to handle us at base. They were too frightened we were going to riot because we're all in the same boat. We'd all had just exactly 3 months in England. And there was these base sergeants and sergeant majors, etc., never been out of the country, and they didn't know just how to handle us. They handled us with absolute kid gloves. Anyway, the last night we were there, there was a little tea shack, and it had two Sawyer stoves for boiling his water for tea. Well, both of them landed up in the company officers, in the company, the company officer's office. But nothing was done about it. I made a mistake with the length of time of the embarkation leave. It wasn't 10 days, it was 14 days. So we got 14 days embarkation leave. So we got 28 days disembarkation leave and 14 days embarkation leave. And that was included in the 91 days that we were in England. Days embarkation leave. So we got 28 days disembarkation leave and 14 days embarkation leave. And that was included in the 91 days that we were in England. This is a photograph of Tom King and his wife, Wynne. It was taken as they were married in 1940. He had a chemist shop in Blackpool. And we kept friendly and in touch with each other by letter, right up to him dying at Easter 1992. I see there's only about a minute left on this tape, so I'll pack this in now and dig another tape out and finish off. The RAMC base depot at Aldershot, this draft of 168 senior NCOs and warrant officers, and we finished up at Bruges in Belgium in a transit camp. We were there for about a week, and then this list of postings was put up. And I'd been posted to number 8 field dressing station, Guards Armoured Div. And Bob Jones, who was a sergeant in 13th General in the Middle East, and who travelled back with me to England under this Python scheme, he was on the same draft again, and he'd been posted somewhere else. So we went down into town and we dug out where this major's office was, who was in charge of all postings. I went and saw him and explained to him that we'd been together in the Middle East, and that could we be together now, because 8th field dressing station wanted two sergeants, and could Bob Jones be swapped over with this other bloke? Anyway, I was quite in agreement. He said, oh yes, he says, that's no difficulty. So I just did an amendment, and it was me and Bob Jones then posted to 8th field forward dressing station, and this other bloke was posted to where Bob Jones was going. Anyway, we left the transit camp on the Saturday and we got into Germany to another transit camp Saturday night. And Sunday morning they sent a signal off to Guards Div that we were there and we wanted onward transmission to 8th Field Dressing Station. And we waited all day, and it was about 6:30 at night before the truck came to pick us up. And we just thought, oh my God, what efficiency. But anyway, it turned out all right, because it was quite a good unit. Now this is the building we occupied at Zulpik. This is where 8th Field Dressing Station was. And it had been, I think at one time it had been a mental hospital. And then it had been changed more or less to a geriatric hospital.